You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast, and once again, special thanks to Revolver Podcast for making all this possible. Everybody, here we are. It is time, and let's get into our stories. The first story tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is coming out of the state of Pennsylvania, where I'm sure lots of other great things happen, but this is a ghost story, so it told. It says, this story is about my grandfather's ghost. A week ago, on Easter after dinner, my mother and I and her friend, Lisa, began talking about ghosts. My mother said that about 4 years ago, around the anniversary of my grandfather's death, she began to see things. She saw a figure with no face, wearing tan khaki shirt and pants, on two different occasions. And for the first time, she was walking down the hallway in our house and saw the figure standing in our living room, which is never even used. The second time, she was walking down the hallway towards the garage to throw a soda can out and proceeded to reach for the door and saw the figure again. The same thing, no face, but wearing tan khakis. She said to herself, I know I saw something there. She then told her brother, my Uncle Bob, about it, and he said to her, oh, that's Dad. She looked at him and said that he didn't wear khakis, and he was only in the army briefly, and he said, yeah, but what did he wear to work every day? Tan khakis with PP&L written on the shirt. My grandfather worked for PPL, which is Pennsylvania Power and Light, and retired in 1976, and he always went to work wearing tan khakis. Then, not long ago, this happened. My mom had another experience. She said she was standing at the kitchen sink when suddenly she felt a hand on her back. My stepfather used to come up behind her and scare her, so thinking it was him, she said, oh, okay, I'm getting supper ready. However, she turns around to see my stepfather coming through the back door from outside. He looked at her and said, Jesus, you look like you just saw a ghost. Huh. It says, I hope that if and when my grandfather comes back to visit, I hope I'll be able to see him like my mom did. This one's coming out of California, and this happened to my friend Ted about 30 years ago. When he was young, probably between about 12 or 13 years old, his parents had a second home by Lake Isabella that was located in a mobile home park near the water. Lake Isabella is a quaint little town that is surrounded by wilderness and that is famous, well, at least in our region it's famous, for its man-made lake. They would visit about once or twice a month just for the weekends, so the rest of the time it was pretty much uninhabited, or so they thought. His parents had gone on to visit some friends a few doors down, and Ted decided to stay home alone and watch television. While he was lying down on the couch and relaxing, he turned his head and noticed an odd glow in his parents' bedroom down the dark hall. He said it was as though the entire bed was glowing. He didn't know what it was, but in a stupid act of bravery, he yelled, "Whatever you are, get the hell out of my house." He never saw what it was, but felt it coming after him down the hall in a sudden jolt. He was lifted off the couch and thrown behind the couch, hitting the wall hard and landing on the floor. He stayed frozen for a moment, then got back on the couch and covered himself with a blanket and waited for his parents to get home. He never experienced this again. My explanation to him is that it could have been a djinn that inhabited the home because they were gone so much. I don't know. I hope you all enjoyed that. Take care and God bless. I don't know how you could ever come to the conclusion that it could be a djinn. That's a pretty specific kind of spirit. Not to say that it's wrong, but, you know, there's djinn are pretty much an uber powerful spiritual being. Sometimes malevolent, sometimes benevolent, sometimes just neutral, but although being lifted off a couch and thrown is no small act, but I don't know. I still don't understand how you would make it to that's a djinn. But anyway, I will leave it with that person. All right, the next one is out of Colorado. This experience is not for the ones who are scared of ghosts. Well, that's not us. We're not scared of ghosts. So I was a teen and my mom and I got into an argument and I told her not to close my door or turn off my light. She does it anyways. And I'm sitting under my blanket and all of a sudden it flies off of me. I pull it back on and something hits my face. My little brother, 12 at the time, came in and asked if I was okay. I was screaming. He took a look at my face and the right side was a maroon handprint twice the size of my hand. He got my mom and she said to cut the crap. And the next day in the algebra class, I was set up against the wall on my desk and I felt something breathing on my neck. I looked above me and the air vent was on the other side of the room. That night I fell asleep. At 1 a.m., I woke up feeling really cold and I opened my eyes and could see my own breath. The next thing I knew, my favorite stuffed animals grabbed out of my arms, and I started crying. The next thing I knew, my arms were being scratched by a fork. How the fork got up there, I don't know. I wore a jacket to color guard the next day, and the scratches that bled profusely the night before went away. No traces, even scabs. The next night, I was sleeping, and at the same time the night before, I felt cold. Again, I could see my own breath, and I looked next to me and saw a long imprint on the bed. I put the blanket over my head and it flew off, and then my figure started to flip my hair. Oh, that's so creepy. I checked out a lot of books, and they were all coincidental to me. And for example, poltergeists usually revolve around one person. Second, they usually occur between the ages of 10 to 20. And lastly, the person it occurs to is usually either sad or angry, and I was both. And it's also pretty common manifested, most commonly manifested around pubescent girls. So that is probably the right criteria, but that's not an abundance of activity, but it's, you know, certainly not insignificant, but if those are the only encounters, I probably wouldn't think it would be a poltergeist. Although they do, I mean, generally the activity with a real poltergeist is pretty phenomenal. But it's possible. I don't know. They don't all last, you know, for real long periods of time, obviously. But anyway, all right, this one comes out of Washington, ladies and gentlemen. This one's a little bit longer. I'm 23 now, but this occurred when I was about 16 years old. And I lived in my parents' house about 12 miles or so from where I live now. And from the time I was a child until now, I always read myself to sleep. This night was no different. I had begun reading by lava lamp since it's a dim light and makes it easy to fall asleep. And when I was reading, the TV was on in the living room and the lights were on around 11 at night. And I fell asleep, and as usual, with a book and my lamp still on. Now at this time, my bedroom door was broken and a brick was in front of it so that someone walked by, it wouldn't blow open. That is important. What must have been a few hours later, I was woken up to the sound of my door opening. The brick made a swooshing noise across the carpet. I opened my eyes just enough to see who was there, and at first, seeing as how I was totally asleep, I couldn't understand who I was staring at. However, there was a dark figure in my doorway. I noticed that the house was completely dark and quiet, so my entire family must have gone to bed as well. It must have been a very late because my parents wouldn't turn off the TV and go to bed until after waking up very late and realizing they should go to bed. Remember, my lava lamp was on because I'd fallen asleep with it on and book was in my lap. However, the figure was completely black. The lava lamp illuminated my entire room, and if standing in the doorway, the front of the person should have been completely visible. Also, behind the person, in the ceiling, is a skylight, so the back was lit up as well. The figure was still totally black, blacker than anything else in the house. He was huge. It was the standard size of the doorway, but he reached up to the full height and filled the entire frame. Much larger than my father or my brother, and his hand was on the doorknob and he was breathing very hard as though he was very angry or totally out of breath. I could hear him breathing and he appeared to be staring at me. Now, I know I wasn't asleep. I'd come full awake at this time, and though I wasn't at all paralyzed, I didn't move. I'm aware of my consciousness because my arm was off the side of the bed and cold from the air from being there probably since I fell asleep. And I was also doing a trick so that I could see without anyone realizing I am awake. A way of looking out of your lashes. It was ingrained in me since I have an older brother who used to sneak in my room and take things when I was asleep. For some reason, I wasn't scared at all, just completely calm, as if there was no reason to feel anything about him. And I fell back asleep with him still standing there, breathing hard, and didn't wake up again until the morning. When I woke up, I instantly thought about him. Now, this could have been a dream because on average people have 6 to 8 dreams in a night. And if this were very late and I woke up when it was light out, I would have had another dream forgotten about that one by the time I woke up. Now, the scary part that really cemented the fact that it wasn't a dream was that when I got out of bed to go into the rest of the house, my door was closed, but the brick was pushed back as though the door had been opened and then closed again. My parents mentioned nothing of a door being unlocked or a window open, and if for someone like that had broken into the house and come into my room, they would have never simply looked at me and left. Anyways, it's not the only experience at my house. All of my childhood, I heard a voice with no gender call myself or my mother. My mother has seen and felt my uncle that died when I was a child, etc. But this was the only time I looked straight at any type of ghost or spirit in the house. Wow. That's pretty bizarre. I don't know. Those kind of stories are tough. I don't know what I would do. You know, I mean, I've seen many weird things, many spooky things, but I don't know, if you looked up out of a dead sleep and saw someone standing in your doorway and it was that big, that's got to be a cliffhanger. I don't know. Or as Don says, code brown. Here's one, and this one has to do with the old hags and sleep paralysis. All right, let's get to the story. Since I was 14, I have had dreams with unseen entities in them. My dreams are incredibly real, taking place in homes that I used to live in or homes that I was slept in. And I can never see these things, but I know exactly where they are in my dreams, and I can hear them. Sometimes they talk, though I can never remember what they said, and I try to scream or to call out and tell them to leave me alone, but sometimes I try to call out for God to help me, but he never does, and I'm paralyzed and I can't speak. It's as if they take away my ability to make sound. One time, one of the things got into my mind from my ear, and I shook it out and woke up, and sometimes when I'm just about to fall asleep, the atmosphere will change in my room, and suddenly, I jolt awake. It's like my body becomes hypersensitive to my surroundings and is open to otherworldly things. I used to have to battle these things from taking over my body and would throw fits in my sleep and thrash my head around, just trying to keep them out. I know for a fact that I've done this because an ex-girlfriend watched me do it once, and it freaked her out. I don't understand why this happens to me. I want it to stop, but I'm not sure how. I thought I could turn to God, for I really believed he could help me, but he never once made them go away. Are they really spirits or demons that take the shape of spirits or other forms? I'm lost and scared. Please give me advice. Well, it's, you know, there is a balancing point in all this, ladies and gentlemen, and I think there is truly a psychological phenomenon known as sleep paralysis. I think that truly is a condition that some people suffer from. However, I do truly believe that there is a spiritual causation to some of that as well. And I know that what science can't do is they can't quantify spirit. They just can't. They don't have the ability to measure. They don't have the ability to catalog or record or to, you know, take spiritual readings to figure out how bad or how low, you know, to give it a gauge. They just can't do that. So instead of acknowledging that could be a causation, they, of course, erase it from the probability of it completely. But I do think that some people suffer from attacks from these beings. Now, I don't know about the whole God doesn't help me thing, because I really believe that, I really do believe in a being that I usually call God, but just out of simplicity sake, I don't know how to define it other than that it's this, you know, universal, perfect, amazing life force that created a whole bunch of things. But I don't know why people have the idea that it should, you know, this amazing, multidimensional, perfect being should just run and save them over and over. You know, it's not, and I'm not saying that, you know, I got to be careful how I say this, because I'm not saying that people don't deserve it or that they shouldn't be saved, but I'm saying that, I don't know, people have an expectation that if I say this, then this, and what if it doesn't happen? Well, in terms of faith, I think everything depends on the heart of the believer, of the faithful. I think everything depends on the heart of the faithful and how much of that energy you can bring through to help you out. Now, I don't know that this universal consciousness called God can, or that I call God, can just sit and watch somebody's dreams going, oh, that person's dealing with some crap, let me get over there and help them out. Now, there is an omniscience, and I understand that, but I think that there's also a person has responsibility to take care of themselves and to, God, I don't know if I'm even saying this right. It's even been one of those days. I know what I'm trying to say, but it's really hard to shape it into words. Basically, we, you know, in anything that you have faith in, it depends on your amount of faith or how much true faith. Now, faith is not the same thing as I believe in this, so therefore it should always save me. Faith is is an exercise of living in a manner which would promote that energy to be a part of your life and more. Some people use this God thing like it's a hanky in their pocket, and they run around and do their lives, and then when things get really crummy, it's like, oh, God, I got my God flag, you know? And it's like, that's not how it works. It's not like you get to be, and I'm not trying to suggest this person isn't a good person, but there is a mentality that like it's like a get out of jail free card or something that you just whip out when you need it. But to exercise faith is an every moment kind of thing. And I believe that that's why Jesus said you have to pray without ceasing. And it's not meaning that you should be folded in prayer like this 24 hours a day. But what I think that statement means is that you have to embody that spirituality at all times. And so I don't know this person's spirituality that wrote the story, but I think that some people have unrealistic expectations for how the divine should respond to them because they believe. All right. One night I was laying in bed when I realized I really needed to go to the bathroom. Getting up, I went down the hallway to our small bathroom, which is upstairs, and I noticed that the bathroom door was shut, but the light was off, so I thought nothing of it, and I went to open the door, but I suddenly heard a loud sound of someone clearing their throat. I thought it was my uncle who had recently moved in with us and decided to wait for him to get out. I waited in bed for about 10 minutes and finally decided to just go to sleep. That's some serious bladder control. A few hours later, I woke again and went to get out of my bed, and suddenly the bathroom lights began to flicker madly. I stepped closer to the hallway when I heard a loud crash in the bathroom and wondered what had happened. I peeked behind me and looked into my brother's room to see if see him fast asleep, and figuring it was my uncle again, I walked up to the door and said, "Uncle Gary, what are you doing?" There was no reply. I stepped back and heard a faint gurgling noise. Listening for a moment, I realized it was my uncle snoring fast asleep in his room. Terrified, I ran into my brother's room and climbed into his bed for the remaining 3 hours until morning. When morning came, I asked my mom if she had used the bathroom, and she said, no, she hadn't. And so I asked my stepdad, and he told me he had gone to the bathroom, so I asked him why he hadn't responded when I asked him what was going on, and why was he flicking the lights on and off. And then he asked, what are you talking about? I used the bathroom downstairs, and I didn't do anything like that. Since then, we've moved, but every night, I still check the bathroom before using it. Yeah, that's terrible. And it could be somebody stuck in their death state. Maybe they passed in their bathroom. That might have been their last place. Sometimes spirits, when they pass, get stuck in what's called a death state, where they just kind of keep experiencing their death over and over and over. And I can't imagine what a torment that must be. But I guess it's them processing or working through the fact that they passed. But I don't know. Very strange. This all started when we moved into our new house, and we have a lot of strange things going on here. I live here with my mom, my stepdad, younger brother, Darian, and youngest brother, Devin. Darian is 13 and Devin's 11, and we first started feeling things when we would go into Dev's room. It was always colder than ours and darker, and it never felt quite right. But we would stay in there nonetheless because it's hot in Vegas. And his room is always much colder than the rest of the house. That's one benefit. It's like the haunting is like a air conditioner. And when you go into his room, a wave of unease would just wash over you. It was hard to breathe, and I've always been a little sensitive with things like that, and I'd had a lot of encounters with things of this nature. It unsettled me a lot to feel that this was much worse. Sometimes when I would walk in there to watch TV with my brothers, I would get a horrible pain in my arm, leg, head, or stomach. So I limited the time I spent in there and stayed in my room, which always felt really cozy and safe. Everything started to get a bit out of hand when my friend Gina came over after school one day. Excuse me. She's a bit of a sensitive as well, and I wanted to see if she felt as horribly as I did when she entered that room. Sure enough, when we walked in, she felt really uneasy and wanted to get the hell out of there. But at the same time, we wanted to know who or what was in there. So we went about making our own Ouija board. And board is spelled B-O-R-E-D. Bad idea number one. We sat on Devin's bed and proceeded. Darian, Gina, and myself, Devin had stayed at his mom's house with a friend, and we talked for whatever it was that had contacted us through the board, and we asked its name, and it spelt out a series of letters we couldn't keep up with. And then it said, Ray. We talked to it, and it claimed to be a demon. Shortly after that, I got a sharp pain in my head, and Gina told me to grab my crystal and go in my room, and I did, and the pain quickly subsided. Later on, we decided we were brave enough to try a seance. Bad idea number two. We chose the garage, and we made the circle of salt, joined hands, and we decided to call him Ray. It got cold. Really, really cold. And my cat, Mystique, went insane. She's also my familiar, and she was inside desperately scratching and meowing desperately at the door. What I chose to see might not have been what my brother and Gina saw, but I saw a man, tall, hair slicked back, but it was long, and his jaw was bristling with hair. I couldn't see his eyes. I didn't try to look at him directly, more like past him to see my brother. It turned towards me, and I still made no attempt to look at its face. At this point, I was terrified. I got a hideously sharp pain in my stomach, like someone was turning all my guts inside out, and I thought I was going to die. The pain was unbearable, and I was crying in agony, and Gina told us to picture it going back into the room and being locked in there. We did. We broke the circle, and we went inside, and sometimes when I go in that room, I get chills, or when I'm just passing it, but I know I never want to experience that again. Yeah, you don't play with darkness, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing good can come of it. It's wild that there are some esoteric practices that teach to try to bind dark entities, and there are, you know, magical practices that try to utilize that dark energy and to, you know, utilize it for themselves. And I just can't imagine the whatever benefit you would get would just be certainly outweighed by, you know, being attached to something so dark for the rest of eternity. That just can't be good. All right, guys, this is probably a great place for us to take a break. So don't go away, everybody. We'll be right back. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here, the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal Store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Guys, we're back from the break. I'm glad you made it, and we are going to continue here. This is coming out of the state of Washington, which is right in our neighborhood up here. So this is having to do with sleep paralysis. So these are terrible. I experienced sleep paralysis for a long time, and it's a horrible, horrible thing. Ugh. All right. One night when I was about to go to sleep and my lights were turned off, I didn't think much of it. So I just brushed my teeth and laid on my bed. And I watched some TV before going to sleep. It was late, probably around 2 o'clock in the morning. And I turned off my TV and decided to fall asleep. Usually I like to sleep on my stomach, and I don't know why, but I do. So maybe an hour or two later, I felt someone lean their weight on my back, and I couldn't breathe. My dad's a heavy guy, so I thought it might be him telling me to get up or something, so I tried to turn over and tell him to get off, but I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe, and it was really cold and scared. Nothing scares me, but I was scared. So I laid there maybe about a minute, and then I got the strength to turn around. And when I did, there was nothing but footsteps around my room. I heard them. I was absolutely scared out of my mind, and I didn't know what to do, and I tried to shout for my mom and dad, but I was really speechless. Nothing came out of my mouth when I tried to shout. When it all ended, I ran up to my parents' bedroom, petrified, speechless, and cold, and to this day, I haven't told them why their 15-year-old son ran into their bedroom like a 16-year-old girl or a 6-year-old girl. Oh, yeah, but, you know, I don't know. When it happened to me, I would have loved to run to my mom. It was like, I can't move. It's terrible. It's just it's the most helpless you'll feel. I can't say the most, but it's the most helpless I've ever felt. It's just to know that's going on and know that there's really nothing you can do. But it happened to me over such a long period of time, and I'm talking like on and off for a period of years, that I learned how to break out of it. But it's just like I don't know how to say it. And I'm not trying to glamorize this at all or glamorize myself at all. Believe me. I mean, I don't think that, you know, I'm anything special, but I just figured that, you know, you've just got to focus on one thing with all of your ability and make it move. If it's just a pinky, if it's a toe, if it's something, just get it. One thing moving. And then when you get that thing moving, you got to kind of spread it out. Then, so if you're moving a toe, try to move the other toes. And then try to move your foot once you get that moving. Because it's really weird because it like wants to suck you backwards. Even when you're fighting through that, it still wants to pull you backwards. And if you let go at all, you're going to be back to frozen. And it happened to me many times. So whatever's going on, you got to fight all the way through it until you're able to get up out of bed. At least that was the case for me. I had to get out of bed and go walk around. And just that feeling that someone's there doing it to you. And all you can do is just, I mean, imagine that's what a fly feels like in a web, right? It's like, oh God, oh man, oh damn it, you know, and there's nothing they can do. They're just stuck, and all they can do is wait for the bite. What a horrible thing. So, yeah, that's kind of like what sleep paralysis is like. And if you have experienced it, I'm really sorry that you've gone through it, but I guess you can appreciate what I'm saying. If you haven't experienced it, oh, that's awesome, and I hope you never do. It's just really frustrating and horrible, and it's even emasculating because, you know, I was an adult when it happened to me, so I wasn't like some teenager. I was in my, you know, 30s and, well, no, late 30s, I guess, when I was fighting through all that, and, you know, I wasn't a kid. I wasn't a little boy. I was a man and completely unable to help myself. It was just like, oh. You know, and it happened like when I was with a girlfriend at the time, you know, she was asleep right next to me and I wanted so bad to try to get her attention so she could help me, you know, just like to, cause I felt like if she would just turn over and go, hey, you know, so I'd try to like make my breath more erratic or something that might wake him up. It's terrible. It's really terrible. The next story, ladies and gentlemen, is coming out of the state of New York. New York, huh? Quit boasting my chops. All right. My brother and I have 3 cats. Tasha, my cat, is a long-haired Angora. Minu, my dad's cat, is a short-haired Russian blue. And then there's Jessie. Jessie was my brother's cat, and she lived a long and happy life. She lived to be 17, and that's real old for a cat, if you believe in the dog years thing that applies for cats, she would have been 119 years old for human years. That is old for a cat. She was loved by all of us, and we would pet her, and she would love, and we would love her as much as all the cats. Well, my cat Tasha is a little brat, and she will attack any cat I pet. She would attack Jessie, and I think one day she finally hurt her. And Jessie would just lay on our floor and just stay there, and we knew she would die soon. We put food next to her and water, and even my brother would sleep next to her, and when she died, I was the last one petting her and laying next to her, and we buried her in my grandmother's backyard. My brother wrapped her in his favorite blue blanket, and all of our cats are girls also. Even as I write this, although she died a year or two ago, I'm crying like a little baby. But one night I was laying down and I felt a cat on the bed. And I go to pet her, thinking it's my cat, and I feel nothing but warmth. I was sure it was Jessie. I don't know why she came to me when she was Tyler's, my brother's cat, but I felt comforted though, and so I fell asleep. And then my brother got a new cat from my uncle, and he named it Teddy, our first boy cat. It was scary. The kitten looked just like Jessie when she was younger. We got him spayed, neutered. It said spayed and then in parentheses neutered. And he would go to the bathroom all over. We brought him to the pound with everyone crying, and we ended up getting him back since we couldn't take it. After all, I saw him meowing to another cat, and there was not one there. And after that, he stopped going all over. I think animal spirits, they do stick around, or they're near. At least I hope they are. I mean, but, you know, we love our pets. We love these little fluffy bags of fun. Some of them are big bags of fun. I had a German Shepherd. It was great. And I've had cats as well, and I've loved every one of them. They're just, I don't know, something so neat about their energy. And when you think about it, I mean, they're animals. But for some reason, they want to be a part of our world. And that's pretty cool. And some people treat their animals better than they treat people. And that's okay, too, because some people don't really earn being treated very well. But you know what I mean. All right. I mean, I've known people that have loved their dogs more than their own children, and that, to me, is tragic. But not that, you know, the animals aren't wonderful, but, you know, you don't overvalue that from your children. You make it at least even, you know. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. The next one is coming out of Pennsylvania, ladies and gentlemen, and this one's a little bit longer, but not too bad. So this story I'm about to tell you happened when I was a toddler and lived in Pennsylvania, and I'm currently 12. And live in Florida, so enjoy. Okay, we will. Encounter number one. My mom always told me that my sister and I used to talk to a boy named Ronald when we were younger. She is 17 now, and we both talked to him at the same age, and never talked about him to each other, yet still had the same name of the person when we told our mom. I remember waking up in the middle of the night and hearing some rustling going on around in the basement and people coming up and down the stairs, and I went out there one night with the curiosity of finding out who it was, and I didn't see anybody. But a really small light, of course. I didn't know what an orb was then, so I just crawled back to bed and forgot about it. Encounter number two. My dad was about to go upstairs for the night, and our door was right in front of the steps. He was literally exactly next to the door when he heard a knock. He opened the door only a millisecond after and found absolutely no one standing there. No one was running away or hiding anywhere either. Number three. We had a barn without any animals in it down the hill, and because we lived on a mountain, it was always locked, and yet whenever we went down there, papers were everywhere. My dad used the upstairs and the next room door as offices from his old job, and they put a baby monitor down there to make sure no raccoons or anything was in there, and then they heard human footsteps in the barn, and they thought they were the teenagers from down the street, so when they went down, the doors were still locked and no windows were broken. No way to get in or out. And when they checked, nobody was in there and there were papers on the floor. That's creepy. Encounter number four. This is the last encounter that happened at our house, and it was around midnight, and my dad was out of town on a business trip, and my sister was about 8, and I was about 3, and we used to live on an Indian battleground, which is what we thought explained everything, but this put the icing on the cake. My mom woke up at midnight, surely enough, to the sound of an Indian battle fight. She thought it was the TV, so she looked up to turn it off, but it wasn't on. She checked all the TVs, radios, and mass media around the house, and yet no sound was coming out of any. She still heard the fight, but didn't want to look out the window because there was probably something out there from where she heard the yelling and the hooves of horses. Wow. That's more than likely residual, though, right? I mean, that's not... I don't believe there's... reenactments going on in the spirit world. So it's just, those kind of things, as frightening as they may be, I would think are more than likely just residual. Although it could be a spirit's way of communicating. Like, so for instance, in that situation, if there was a Native American spirit, First Nations spirit at the house, unable to really communicate, whether or not they can be telepathic or, whatever. But in order to tell their story and to help the people living there understand who they are, in order to attempt to communicate, they may create that sound so people would have the understanding that maybe this was a warrior who lost his life in that battle, and that's his way of explaining that situation. This is where I came from. It's just a way to communicate. I do think that they try to communicate with us quite a bit. Now, the spirit in the barn, that to me just sounds horrible. And the reason it sounds horrible is this. I don't really know what to expect when we pass. And we certainly heard through the many, many years of doing the show, many ideas of what's going to happen. But, I don't remember being there last time, whenever my journey was over on my last leg of this trip, but... So I don't know what I experienced, but one of the things that really kind of worries me is like, what if that's it? Like, you get stuck in a closet looking at clothes for eternity, or you're stuck in an old barn that nobody's in, nobody visits, and all you can do is just wander around and maybe throw some paper around for something to do. My God, that would be horrible. I mean, no internet, nothing, no dish, TV, no cable. You're just sitting there with maybe some old papers. What are you going to do? So I hope that that's not their reality, because that would just be so sad. I don't know. But then again, maybe they need to process and before they can truly move over to the next world. But God, being stuck somewhere like that. And then you watch things like The Dead Files. And she's always talking about people being stuck in walls and weird crap like that. It's like, oh my God. This is not on the brochure. This is not the way the brochure explained it. I don't want to be stuck in a wall. So anyway, just my random thoughts on that whole deal. But I don't know. Whenever I read a story like that, it's like, what are they going to do? Of course you'd go kind of nuts. You'd probably go pretty insane. You'd probably end up being a pretty crabby spirit. Oh, you living people, it can go wherever you want. Screw you. I'm stuck here looking at your old papers. It's coming out of Utah. Utah, ladies and gentlemen, Utah. 3 years ago, I worked on a very nice rest home as a CNA, which is Certified Nursing Assistant. Thank you very much. It's called the Courtyard at Jamestown Assisted Living Facility. And if anyone reading this is from Utah... It's just off University Avenue, right before Will's Pit Stop. The people I helped there were very near the end of their lives, obviously, so we had a lot of people pass on there, but not a lot of them hung around thereafter. They had died. So usually occurrences were not the norm for the residents and staff. The residents got a hold of the CNAs by use of pull cords in their rooms that alerted us to a pager that would buzz and vibrate and show the room number of the person that needed help. Or they had a necklace that had a button so they could push to summon help. Now, this is important to remember. The pull cords in the apartments had to be pulled with a fairly forceful tug to be activated and can only be reset by going into the room and pushing the little plastic switch attached to it back up. The day prior to when this story occurred, one of our residents suddenly took a nosedive downhill and had to go to the hospital, where she passed away that night. It was really very sudden, and this lady, Anna, had been very healthy and active just a few days before. At the end of our shift, the day after she passed away, me and two other CNAs were still sitting in the staff room charting, and all the other CNAs had gone for the day, as well as the RN and LPN that are there during the daytime, so we were the only staff left in the building. Our pager started to buzz, which is nothing out of the norm, until one of my coworkers pulled out her pager to see who needed us and realized that the room that was calling was Anna's, and she was dead. Her face completely drained of color for a few seconds, and we all thought this was a little strange, but sometimes the necklace call buttons malfunctioned, so we figured that was probably what it was and decided to just go check the room, and in case it was family that needed help moving her stuff out of some ordinary thing like that. We reached her room, and the door was locked, and the only ones with keys are the residents themselves and the nursing and housekeeping, and this is important to keep in mind when reading what we found in the room. We unlocked the door, and all the lights were off, and we noticed that the actual pull cord had been pulled down, and that's what summoned us to the room, not a malfunction necklace call light. And after we got over our initial shock, we noticed that there were blankets and couch cushions strewn all across the living room, and that it had not been like that when she had left for the hospital the day before. It could have been family, but would you leave your mother's apartment all torn up? At this point, we were all getting a little freaked out, but someone had to reset the call light. And that night, I was not feeling at all like going into her room. So me and the other CNA ganged, Kristen, and pushed her into the room and forced her to do it. Oh, ganged up on. Okay. Not nice, I know. And she ran in, pushed the switch up, and ran out, almost tripping on a couch cushion in her haste to escape. We were all a little shaken, and when the graveyard shift arrived, we told them what had happened, and they, of course, didn't believe us. And as far as I know, nothing else ever happened in that room. I think it was Anna just saying goodbye to the courtyard and the staff, and she was a really fun lady who probably got a kick out of seeing us so scared. Well, it's good to have a sense of humor. Like Jeffrey says, you want to know what changes when you die? Nothing. You are the same person. So if someone's likes to joke around like that in life, they're going to do it after they're done too. All right. This one comes out of California, and it's quite a bit longer. So this will be the last one for the night, ladies and gentlemen. Out of California. Now, since I was 9 or 10 years old, I've felt ghosts, and they've touched me, and I've heard them before, but I hadn't seen them until a year and a half ago when I was 18. My family and I had just moved out of our house, which was we had lived in since I was in kindergarten, to about 12 years. In this house, I was sure there was a ghost, but it was a really nice ghost and only bothered me a few times. We were moving into a two-story townhouse, and I adored the place. My and my sister's room was upstairs, and we had a balcony that went off of it and huge sliding glass doors. And after staying there a few nights, my room would be too cold to bear, and I complained to my mom that it was freezing in there. It was weird because the rest of the house was actually pretty hot. My mom said it was because of the sliding glass doors, and she went and bought a very thick curtains, and it warmed up the room a little bit, but not much. I'd usually come home around 10:30 or 11 at night and talk to my boyfriend on the phone before I go to sleep. And then I go upstairs to my room and go to sleep. And I always got the feeling I was being watched, but I just ignored it. In the middle of the night, I heard footsteps running back and forth in the hallway. I figured it was my parents or my brother, and all of our rooms were on the second floor. The next morning, I asked all of them if they were gotten up last night and were walking around out in the hallway, and they all said no, so I just ignored it. Another night around 1 or 2 in the morning, I was woke up by footsteps down the stairs and then the door to our backyard opening and closing like someone was slamming it. I was really pretty scared, so I turned over in my bed and closed my eyes and forced myself to go back to sleep. I told my boyfriend about it and how I feel weird in my room and like someone is watching me, and then I always feel like someone is there with me. He says I'm crazy until one night he came over and we went to my room to watch a little movie, and the TV was by the sliding glass doors that go out onto the balcony, and he was putting in the movie when he dropped it and looked over at me. And I was like, "What?" And he said, "No, I don't want to scare you, but I just saw a lady standing on your balcony, and then she just vanished." He told me that she had long blonde white hair and had a blue dress on. Unfortunately, I didn't see her, but my boyfriend sure was starting to believe me then. Another time, my boyfriend was babysitting my one-year-old brother at the house, and And no one else was there, and he had put my brother upstairs in his crib to sleep, and he had heard some footsteps upstairs and some noise, so he went back up there, and while he was walking up the stairs, the bathroom light was on, so he turned it off, and he walked into my parents' room where the crib was and looked around, and my little brother was asleep, and he went back down to the hall, turned to go down the stairs, and he looked over and noticed the bathroom light was on now. He thought nothing of it and turned it off and went downstairs, and once downstairs, he heard more footsteps, so he proceeded back up the stairs and noticed the bathroom light was back on again. He went into my parents' room, and there was my brother, was sitting straight up staring at the wall, which is weird because when he wakes up, he usually cries, but he hadn't, and he didn't even look over when my boyfriend walked in. A week later or so, me and my boyfriend and my stepdad and brother were in the living room, and we were all sitting on the couch, and I heard a noise, and I looked over, and I saw a woman standing there. And I said, "Mom?" And the woman vanished. So I got up, and I thought maybe my mom was home, so I looked all over for her, but she wasn't there. It was the same woman my boyfriend had seen on the balcony with blonde hair and a blue dress. My mom has blonde hair, and that's why I thought it was her. On another occurrence, my boyfriend spent the night downstairs at my house, and in the middle of the night, he woke up and saw the same woman was there standing at the end of the couch, staring at him. She stayed there for a few minutes and then walked away, and he saw her feet going up the stairs, and he then heard footsteps in the hallway above going straight to my room. She was so weird, the only ghost I've ever seen. She didn't seem mean, but she seemed like she needed attention or something. She actually really creeped me out, and I don't know why. There you go. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at paranormalportal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So I hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody.
Gambling is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.